An episode where you get to understand the owner's manual of your mind, and you're able to receive the words you wished your father always said to you? Is that possible? Of course it is. It's Open Loops. There are two minds. The conscious mind and your unconscious mind is now tuned in to your favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey, everybody. Hello, hello, it is I, Chief Looper, cultural hypnotist, your curator of experience, consciousness disruptor. That's the one I like the most. I should just stick with that. Greg Bornstein here, everybody. My goal in this show is to challenge your existing belief systems by sharing radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind so you can step into the highest version of yourself. We talk about things that other shows might not want to talk about. Why? Because they tap into the unconscious, the mysterious, the esoteric, the secretive, the magical, the hypnotic, the conspiratorial, the mind-blowing, really the unexplained, the supernatural, the deepest questions of them all. Mainly, of course, who and what we really are. Because that's what an open loop is. It's an unconscious provocation. It's the thing that makes you want to go. It's that feeling you get when you open a Wikipedia article and you just want to know more. The proverbial dot, dot, dot. The thing that just leads you to become even more curious. We're all about open loops here. And this episode could have been a closed loop situation. And then, of course, you know how they always talked about sometimes the class you think is going to be the most boring topic in college ends up being the best just because of the professor? Now, I won't say Papa Ray's subject was boring because it dealt with the mind and the owner's manual of the mind. Anyone that claims they understand how this thing on my head is working in any capacity, because believe me, I'm thinking of the IKEA manual to Greg Bornstein's brain, because I'm putting the Swedish words into Google Translate, and it still ain't getting me anywhere. So that is intriguing. But the other thing that I was curious about was the father's blessing. I didn't know what I would do with that. The father's blessing, what does that mean? Is it religious? Is this issue of absent and abusive fathers going to be that compelling for all of you out there? Of course it is. It's an interesting topic. It's about the human experience. It's about something that isn't proudly spoken about throughout the world. It's nothing. It's dramatized, but Papa Ray Hurst, personal transformation coach, has a personal story with that he goes into in this podcast, as well as shares a remarkable, remarkable moment where it all changed, and he now possesses the words, the spirit of the blessing. And if you keep listening, you even get to experience it yourself. Yes, Ray Hurst, I love this gentleman. Such a warm presence, such a spirit. Again, I didn't know how long the conversation could go, and yet it kept going. And that's always the best, when I'm surprised by how engaged I am with someone's topic. So Ray really delivers. If you've ever felt any sense of abandonment or struggle with any of your parental figures, this is an episode that really, I believe, could make a difference in your life. And I'm not even BSing you in a clickbaity podcast kind of way. Powerful stuff happens in this. There is a spiritual transmission in this episode that is, it's undeniable. If you have someone that you know needs that kind of inspiration, that uplift, please make sure to share Open Loops with them, as well as make sure to follow Open Loops Conversations That Bend on Apple Podcasts. And if you like these kind of conversations too, please rate the show, give it a 5-star review, and leave a few words. It always helps. Greatly, greatly appreciated. Yeah, I'm in the space of gratitude today. But don't DM me your Venmo handle, okay? Yes, you can DM me at the Greg Bornstein on Instagram. But if you're going to say, hey, Greg, you're giving, so give me some of that dough. I will forward a seamless coupon your direction. How about that? I'll give you love. I will give you Greg's blessing. Now, it'll start with a Baruch Atah, because that's how I was learning blessings growing up. But you know what? If you want some nice little, a vocal Hebrew flourish, yeah, reach out to me. Always curious about your thoughts and questions with these episodes. That's at the Greg Bornstein on Instagram. All right. Let's toss it to Papa Ray. Enjoy. Today on Open Loops, we have Ray Hurst, a personal and executive transformation coach. He is, of course, the founder of ILAP Transformation Coaching, Father's Blessing, which deals with absent and abusive fathers. And really, we're going to talk today about his work helping people understand their owner's manual, how it all connects. I'm excited to meet him and talk to him. Ray, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Super excited to be here. This is my greatest passion, to share my message to help people be free.
Yeah. You know, what I'm curious about is, you know, I know now it all connects. This, you were telling me before, that the father message connects with, and the work with the absent and abusive father connects with understanding your owner's manual. What came first for you? Were you into the coaching realm and understanding this body, soul, and spirit work before you really got into this father reconciliation work? Or did the father stuff come first? How did it work for
you? Actually, it was the other way around. So a little bit of backstory.
Yeah.
My father left my home when I was 4 years old. So I grew up with three brothers, and my father barely ever, if at all, paid any child support. So interestingly enough, I grew up in a conservative Mennonite community, which 56 years ago had no idea how to deal with people going through separation and divorce and single parent homes. So that didn't go too well, to say the least.
Right.
They did not handle it well. And so it created some more dilemmas. And so fast forwarding into where we are today, I'll catch up with some of the other things that happen as we go. Is in 2004, I was in Brazil on a mission trip, and I was praying for this girl at this church, and the Holy Spirit told me to stand in the place as her father. And I'm like, I remember this guy talking about this on a video that I was watching. I'm like, oh, I got this. And I'm like, so I said to the girl, oh, I'm so sorry for not being there for you and not loving you and she just starts weeping. I met as a little girl, and I, well, first of all, I said, can I stand in the place as your father? And she goes, right. Yeah, no problem. I said, well, I'm so sorry I wasn't a good father. I'm sorry I wasn't there to hold you and to love you and guide you and, you know, in the way you should have when you were a child. And she just started weeping profusely. I'm like, whoa. And I said, you know, I bless you as my daughter. You're loved. You're accepted. Kind of trying to remember what this guy was saying. Anyway, in the end, this girl was like walking on cloud nine because she had never heard her father say, I love you. I bless you. You're worthy. And none of that. And so I went back to Brazil with the same missions team in 2006. And I'm there for 2 weeks. And so every day we're out in churches praying for people. Literally every person come to me, Holy Spirit said, it's their dad. I'm like, what? And he goes, I'm like, okay, whatever. Every person come to me before they got to say anything, I would say to them, hey, can I stand in the place and as your father and bless you? And they're like, yeah, no problem. And just blew them away. Because so many people, no matter where you go in the world, never heard their dad say, I love you, I bless you. Most of the time they hear harsh words, or the father just simply not there. He's just simply absent, or he's busy. And I get it. I'm 60 years old. My son is 32. My daughter's 29. Unfortunately, I didn't learn this stuff until later. But I'm very, very fortunate. My children still love me, and we have a very, very good relationship. So I'm very fortunate for that. But I get it. As a parent, we're consumed with life. I have a business, you know, so I was trying to run my business, raise a family, make money, trying to keep the roof over the head. And the children come along and they're like, daddy, daddy. It's like, I'm busy. Can't you see I'm busy? But we don't realize what happens in that child's mind. And unfortunately, I didn't learn this until the last 10 years. Is I'm like, oh my gosh. When that child goes to the father and says, daddy, daddy, and daddy's like, hey, I'm busy. Can you just leave me alone? Or after a while, we get aggravated and you start snapping at them. What happens is from conception to 10 years old, your brain is in neural, it's in hyperneuroplasticity, meaning it's just sucking in tons of information. And everything that it sucks in there is, oh, this is what it means. So from conception to 10 years old, that child is not able to say, this doesn't feel right. There has to be a different meaning I need to give to this. No, it's just like, boom, this happened. This is the meaning. And that quick, we solidify a meaning that will literally stay with us for the rest of our life. So back to my story where the father's blessing is, when I went back to Brazil in 2006, one of the two girls stayed in touch with us. We were mentoring them for a while. And in 2010, the one girl said, they start calling me Papa. So that's how I got my name, Papa Ray. And she kept saying, Papa, Papa, you got to come back. I'm like, Marjorie, what am I going to do? She goes, that father thing, we really need that. I'm like, okay, you find a place for me to stay and the places to speak and I'll come down. So I went back in 2010, was the first of four of my solo mission trips to Brazil, all around sharing the Father's blessing. So just a quick backstory on the Father's blessing is that's where I stand as a father, and I bless a person from conception, first, second, third trimester, birth, infant, toddler, youth, and then adult. I'll tell you what, this is now as a personal transformation coach, we do intense transformation sessions. Me standing in the place of that father moves the needle to change their life as much, if not more, than anything else that we do. Because what is the deepest wound that you could get as a child? It's from your dad and your mom. The first person, if you really think this through, that can hurt you, that can disappoint you, is going to be dad and mom. It is amazing. And let's take this a little deeper. We continually find and correct misconception and wrong beliefs that the child perceives when they were in the womb. Through doing this Father's Blessing, is as I am going through, I bless the time of your conception. You're not a mistake. You're not an accident. You are loved. You are wanted. People who never felt that they were wanted or that they were a mistake or they're an accident, it's not unusual for them to become very emotional just in that part alone. And as I'm going through the first, second, third trimester, mostly we'll see it in the second and third trimester. I watch their face intently for micro expressions. And their conscious mind doesn't know this, but their body does. And when I say you are, I bless the time of your in the second trimester, you're not a mistake. You're not an accident. You're not rejected. You're not abandoned. You're not forsaken. There will inevitably be a micro expression. Their eyes flicker. They're just a very small expression on their face. And when I go back and emphasize the truth, you were not abandoned. You were not rejected. You were wanted. When we get done, it is radical, radical transformation.
So this is okay. So you've led to a ton of questions for me. I have to ask. First of all, are you a hypnotist?
No.
Because I was going to say right off the bat, I mean, that is exactly what that, at least that's the parallel I'm coming from. I'm mapping over a lot of classic hypnotherapy techniques and regression, and it could be a father figure, it could be the guiding angel. You take someone back in trance, you have them reconcile with this figure. So if you're not a hypnotist, which is interesting, what do you think, what exactly is going on with you for to have that powerful effect? Is it, are you channeling the spirit of fatherhood? Are you, I'm very curious as to what sort of, either if it's an archetypal thing, or are you channeling that person's direct relationship to the father figure they need? What do you think is working for this blessing to actually take effect?
So in my understanding, my belief, at conception, you're a spirit being. So it's my belief that the egg, the sperm, and the spirit all come together at one time. So that being perceives what is happening around it, toward it, and about it. So at conception, your spirit is perceptive, because I believe we are a body, a soul, and a spirit. Our soul being our mind, will, and emotions. You ever walk into a room and you feel, and people call it a sixth sense, a gut reaction, a vibe, an energy? I call that your spirit. You walk into a room, and you're like, something's really does not feel good. Well, it's my belief that your spirit is radiating out from you, picking up the vibes of what's happening around you in the spiritual realm, and what is projecting from other people's spirits towards you. So if you can imagine that at conception, you are already a spiritual being. Now, I believe your spirit is fully functional right from the get-go, and it is fully perceptive and fully understanding. It's just our mind has to become developed and able to understand what the spirit is giving to us. So as this child is in the womb, it can sense what is the parent's reactions, including the father. You know, you could say, okay, the mother, I get it. You know, there's vibes going on because the baby's there all the time, but it's still coming, it's coming from the father and all the surrounding of what's happening around that child. And we see this because as I go through the Father's blessing, when we speak that truth, it radically shifts and it breaks the lie that they believe. Now, your question was, am I channeling their father or what am I doing? So I really sit down and I say to them, can I stand in the place as your father? So I'm getting a permission, and they're literally opening their heart and their spirit to me as a father figure. So it's very important, if you ever want to mentor, counsel, coach, or guide or direct or lead somebody, is to always ask permission. Because if you don't ask for permission, they're spiritually, mentally, emotionally, they're going to shut down. They're not going to let you in. And if you can say a lot of things, and if they don't let you in, you're not going to make a lot of progress. As a matter of fact, you're going to offend them, and they're just not going to want to deal with you. So we always ask, can I take it deeper? Can I, do you want to go deeper? Do you ask permission? Constantly ask permission. If you see something in a session, you want to go deeper with that. Very, very, very rarely will they say no, but they do. There are some people that say, no, I'm done. I'm not comfortable going further. But here's the key. When you ask permission, you open their mind, you open their heart, you open their spirit. And then you start going deeper and they start resisting. You say, well, you know, are you sure you want to keep going? And they're like, okay. So when they give permission, they're opening themselves up. But you ever have somebody kind of come to you and just kind of push on you and just kind of digging and pushing, pushing? That's really evasive. And after a while, you're like, whoa, I just want to do anything just to get away from this person.
Yeah.
So again, the answer to your question is, just seeking that permission opens their mind, opens their heart, and opens their spirit. They're really hungry and searching for truth. When they hear truth, it radically infiltrates into them and just breaks all them lies off of them.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, I do wonder what it is, Ray, that you're tapping into here, given that I do think... it makes me go, huh, do you even need this hypnosis thing that I've studied for years? Because if you're able, if you're able to get permission from people in a waking state, and they're opening their heart and it actually has a deep impact that changes their lives forever, I'm wondering what neurologically is happening. Maybe the spirit really trumps even the unconscious and the minds.
Oh my goodness. Yes. So I'm glad you said that, because we teach people that as you're a body, soul, which is your mind, will, and emotions, and your spirit. So your spirit is by far a thousand times more powerful than your mind, because your spirit is connecting to the universe, is connecting to God, is connected to other people. So you're literally connected to all these people in your spirit. Now, when you get into it, to me as a devout Christian, I believe in the Holy Spirit, and I have a connection to the Holy Spirit. So as I'm rising up in my spirit and I'm making this connection, what is the number one thing that will take me out of that realm in a heartbeat? Is my mind.
Yeah.
When I get afraid, so here's my spirit rising up, and all of a sudden I have fear or anxiety, bam, my mind says, stop. No, shut it down. And my mind literally takes over. So I say is, when the mind controls the spirit is suppressed. When the spirit influences the mind is empowered. Now, the mind will never allow the spirit to lead until the mind feels safe. So I have to deal with my fear, worry, doubts, anxieties before I'll let my spirit even rise up and venture out into the unknown. So here's the key. My brain is doing a research of my whole life, every moment of every day, to determine what is going to happen in the next moment based 100% on my past perceptions.
Right.
Okay. where is the core of my past perceptions? I call the core from conception to 10 years old. It is when my brain is in hyperneuroplasticity, meaning it's just sucking in tons of information at a high rate of speed. It's not able to categorize like, oh, my dad's just being a jerk or my neighbor's just being a jerk and I really shouldn't think that way about it. No, your brain's like, whoo, sucking it in. It's like, oh, when this happens, that's what it means. When this happens, that's what that means. Now, here is the bad part is no matter how old you are, your brain is going to do a research of your history, primarily your core, to determine what's going to happen in the next moment. And in a nanosecond, it's going to research what is the meaning of this event? What is I perceive in the past? How do I feel right now? How do I feel about this person? And it's going to release neurochemicals, cortisol and adrenaline are the bad guys, serotonin and dopamine are the good guys. In a nanosecond, it's all going to react. Now, when the cortisol and adrenaline get released in a nanosecond of your perception of it not working out well, it releases cortisol. Cortisol takes your cognitive thinking processing ability from 720 bits of data to as low as 20, and boom, in the speed of light. Meaning, you do not have the cognitive thinking processing ability to think rationally and creatively. All happens at the speed of light.
Yeah. That is crazy the way our brain messes us up.
It does. It really does. So the devices that are created in your head to keep you safe actually keep you unintelligent, keep you unwise, and you make decisions that you regret because of the safety mechanisms that are built into your brain.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating. Let me ask you something, Ray. You know what? Here's what I'm very curious about. You mentioned this idea that you're still a devout Christian. I kind of want to dig into that because that's very curious to me in terms of, well, first of all, are you still a Mennonite or are you different?
You know what they say, you can take the boy from the farm, but you can never take the farm out of the boy.
So that's fair.
I am no longer in a Mennonite congregation, but I find myself being very Mennonite in my actions and beliefs.
Interesting.
My wife still wears like a doily, and I gave her the choice because we grew up, my mom always wore a head covering, and my wife did for the first, we're married 36 years for 30 them years, we were in a Mennonite church. Yeah. And I gave her the choice that, you know, it's your decision because it's your belief and how you believe you're connected to God. And she goes, I just feel comfortable continuing to wear it. I said, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
If you looked at us, we look Mennonite, but we're no longer part of a Mennonite congregation. But right. Probably some of our core beliefs are, if you unpack them, they would probably look Mennonite.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm curious how you mentioned some people would have a different path. They would go, okay, father left me when I was poor. I'm part of this community. This community doesn't give me anything to help me with this issue. I'm now a teenager. My father's not coming back. And I'm starting to question the doctrine because they haven't really addressed this gaping hole. Maybe there are other answers beyond Christianity or the Mennonite community. How did you stay in it? What was it that kept you going?
Well, there was a lot of, how could I call it? Running off the road.
Right.
And growing up, turned to drugs and alcohol, got into some things I don't really care to talk about. But so life was definitely not good.
So you did have a rebellious phase. You did have your hero's journey, if you will. Yeah.
I suffered through two major depressions after I was married. So 7 years ago, I was 5 minutes away from suicide. Wow. I had totally given up. I was, I'll just be honest. I'll just be very vulnerable here. I'll tell you how this happened after I share what happened. Is I actually believed that God was laughing at me. So I totally believed that God was real, that he could do anything he wanted to do, but he just didn't want to do it for me. And I got into the belief system that God would call the angels together and just laugh as I was stumbling around on the earth.
Oh my gosh.
It was horrible. So let me, but now, so real quick, 20 years before that, I suffered a major, major depression where I lost my home, had to file bankruptcy, had to sell my business, literally lost everything. And so let me share how I got to that place where I felt God was laughing. I really wanted to die. I honestly was done. And as one thought built onto another thought that built onto another thought. And I got to that place where I'm like, why live? Where's the hope? What's the reason? To what am I, what is my life? If God himself is laughing at me. And I'd had many visions over my 60 years of life is where I envisioned I was reaching up to grab a hold of God's hand and I would miss him by an inch. I would see his hand coming down in a vision and I'd reach up and I would just barely miss. It's like, oh.
I can't even imagine that.
Oh, it was devastating. It was unbelievably devastating to the point it would create these ideas in my mind that God was never going to do anything for me. And guess what I started doing? I started living my life that way. So I lived in anger. And so I lost 30, 40 years of my life to anger, bitterness, and rage and depression because I never, so I like to say, it's a simple 5 steps to understanding any problem is stop. What am I thinking? Why am I thinking that? Is it true? What is the truth? So here's the problem is I have 40 thoughts. We all have around 40 thoughts a minute, probably around 70,000 thoughts a day. So I can think 4 times faster than you can talk. But here's the problem is, did you ever get stuck in the snow or in the mud? What's the first thing you do when you get stuck? you step on the gas.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And then if that doesn't work, you put it in reverse. And what do? You step on the gas. And if that doesn't work, you put it in forward and step on the gas again. Right. Well, that's what we do in our brain. We get stuck emotionally, mentally. And what do? We try to outthink what we're thinking. Okay, I'm stuck. It's like, I'm thinking. I'm trying to outthink. Oh, if I do this, I do that. I do that. And all of a sudden, we're in this frenzy of thinking. And we never stop. What am I thinking? It's so, so critical to say, Ray, what are you even thinking about in the first place? And then here's the critical one. Why are you thinking that? Number 4, is it true? Number 5, what is the truth?
That's a good point too.
Yeah. So here's the thing. If we never, and this is what I didn't do when I was going through my depressions, I never stopped to think, what am I thinking? Why? Now I know why. Because I would literally tell people all my life, up until 7 years ago, I was abandoned. I was rejected. I wore it like an honor badge. I really did. I wore it like a, and you know what it did to me? I lived my life like my honor badge, like I was rejected and like I was abandoned. That's exactly how I lived. Because I told everybody all the time, I'm abandoned, I'm rejected. And I lived that way. Every boss, every leader, every pastor, every male authority figure in my life, I would literally push them until they got angry, upset, rejected, or abandoned me every single time. Why? because that's what I believed male authority figures are going to do to me. I had so ingrained this belief that this is what men in authority do, including God himself.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if that was what you would have. And my gosh, I mean, of course, you're telling me all this. How the heck do you get out of it?
So here, this is part of what the Father's blessing does, is so many people don't feel loved, accepted, wanted by their fathers. And as I stand in the place of that father, so this is why, you know, the standing in that place and speaking them words of truth that they have never heard in their life. When I say, you know, again, I ask permission, can I bless you as your father? And I bless thousands and thousands of people now. Been to Brazil 4 times to do that. Well, actually 6 times. The last 4 were my own. And I'm coming out with my first book. It's called Daddy, Why Don't You Love Me? A Father's Blessing to a Son and a Daughter, Healing the Wounds of the Absent and Abusive Fathers. So that's in editing right now. So
oh, great.
I'm super, super excited about that. But what does a father's blessing do? It speaks to the lie that's at the very core of your being. So even at conception, can you imagine how many children are born out of wedlock? And how many children are born that never really know their fathers, or through divorce or whatever, that these children don't grow up with a good father figure in their home? That is has a majorly devastating effect.
Yeah.
If you do the research, even the all research shows that a lot of social dysfunctional things that are happening can really point back to the absence of a father being present in a child's life. It is so many times it points back to this. And so what happens when I come in and I stand as that father, I'm speaking against that lie. And that heart, that spirit, that person, that body, their physical body is yearning and longing to hear that truth. When that person hears that truth with an open heart, an open mind, an open spirit, bam, it radically, radically transforms it. Now, here's kind of the dilemma with this, is if I meet a person and, you know, I sit down with them for an hour or something, talk for them a while and bless them, and then I go, they have a whole lifetime of memories that they need to correct. Literally hundreds of thousands, maybe billions of things that they have to correct that in their mind.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how do you deal with that? that's a big burden, Papa Ray.
It is. So is what we teach people to do, again, is one of the things we so strongly emphasize is the 5 steps. Stop. What am I thinking? Why am I thinking that? Is it true? What's the truth? So it's like if you listen to Wim Hof or just Dr. Joe Dispenza or any of these people, they're always saying, slow it down. Breathe. So what happens when you breathe? When you take deep breaths, your brain says, hey, we're not freaked out anymore. We're calm. Because when you go into the parasympathetic mode, your breathing gets very, very shallow. But when you start breathing deep, slow breaths, is your brain goes, wait a minute, we're not scared anymore. We're good. So then your cortisol adrenaline washes out of your brain and you come to a more calm state of mind. But the thing is so breath work, meditation, yoga, all these things are good things to bring you into a state of mind. The struggle is coming to a peaceful state of mind doesn't have long-term effects. It has a momentary effect until the next event comes along and gets you stirred up again. Cortisol and adrenaline, you go into parasympathetic mode, your cognitive thinking drops dramatically, and you're into a freaked out state again. The key, what we have to do is we have to do the breath work. We have to do the meditation. But in that time is we got to start examining, what am I thinking? Why am I thinking that? Now, only you can give any event a meaning. So whenever an event occurs in your life, you and I could be sitting there watching the exact same event happen, standing beside each other, and we could walk away with two totally different meanings. So here's the interesting part. God himself cannot change your mind. Because if he could, he would have done it already. The devil cannot change your mind. Or if he could, he would have done it. So,
right.
Yeah. So here's the key. Only I have the right or the ability to give any event in my life the meaning that I give to it. Now, here's the beautiful part. I can go back to any event in my life and I can change the meaning that I gave to it. When I went back and changed the meaning I gave to my father leaving me, remember I said I was abandoned, I was rejected. I would tell people that all the time. And I lived that way. Now I went back to that four-year-old boy and I changed that meaning. I say, when my father left, my father was empty and broken. He couldn't give me what he didn't have. And it radically changed the perception of how I look at people. My circle of influence has dramatically changed for the better in the last 7 years. And it continuously evolves to a higher level of influence because I changed the meaning that I gave to the event that happened in my life that made me say I was abandoned and rejected. I have literally helped. Can we go deep?
Yeah, please, please. This I'm following with you. I'm with you okay. On this journey.
So as a personal transformation coach, I had a friend who had a business. He had 6 employees. And he had 2 employees that were just literally tearing each other apart. I said, here's what we'll do. Is I'll do a 90-minute presentation on understanding your owner's manual. Meaning, how does your brain, body, spirit work together and against each other? Kind of some of the stuff we've been going through already. I said, then what we'll do is each person in your company will go through a 2-hour one-on-one session with me. And we'll dive deep into what some of their struggles are. Well, the secretary, of course, had to go through it. She didn't have any problems in this conflict. And we start going, and I started to sense something, and I always ask permission. I said, can we go deeper? She goes, yeah, well, sure, that's okay. I can see, I mean, so there's a very common things to humans, but then there's also that perception, I have a spiritual perception of what's going on. And so I started digging a little deeper, and I got to a point, and I said, can we go deeper? She goes, sure, why not? She shared that her grandfather had sexually abused her for 5 years. And I had, now remember, I had a 2-hour window with her. So we're about an hour into it now. Let me just clarify this. I am not in any way minimizing the pain that anybody feels from any event. I am in no way minimizing the drama, the trauma, and no way am I minimizing this. I'm just sharing what this lady experienced. When I helped this lady to recognize her grandfather was empty and broken, she had a radical transformation breakthrough in that moment. She told me we did more in that moment than her therapist did in 4 years.
Why do you think you are having this amazing impact? I mean, is it because you are so devout and tapped in the spirit? It's, I mean, that is pretty, because yeah, I suppose a therapist could, this is what I am wondering actually, Ray. This is what's interesting. You know, a therapist could, you could, I mean, that's kind of textbook therapy. The therapist says, well, yeah, you know, even by talking to me right now, there's transference. You're looking at me as a father figure. I'm telling you these things that your father was broken and messed up. You're hearing it, and I know you're hearing it, but your body might not be getting it yet. But that's their role. Their role is to weakly reshape and open your brain up to the idea that you had a limited belief system about this traumatic event. What is it about you, though? What is it about Ray Hurst that is suddenly talking to people, having brief conversations, and doing deep, deep transformation that stays with people?
So I'd like to believe that I do have the ability to have a deep insight. But then there is a very common denominator amongst all people. People are not as difficult as they like to think they are. So we like to say, oh, I have this very complex problem. And again, please, I am not minimizing anybody's experiences in life. I'm not minimizing what anybody's gone through. I went through two major depressions. I realized in the middle of that, I wanted to die. I was literally on the way to committing suicide. I get that. And I can't stress enough, I am not minimizing what anybody's gone through. But I would say in my personal experiences that there's a very commonality between all people. So there's common denominators that I look for, but then there's also, I believe the Holy Spirit gives me insight and wisdom that nobody told me. Because there are many times where I'm working with somebody and I will get a word of knowledge, we call it, that meaning that something came to me that I had no way of knowing outside of the Spirit. And so we use that, and that has, you know, that we're able to bypass all the filters in your brain. Because when you sit down with somebody, there's all these filters that they want to take it slow. And they don't want to go diving to the bottom right away. So they'll protect themselves and not tell you the things. And some people just can't remember. Their brain literally blocked it.
Yeah.
So being led by the Holy Spirit is a huge, huge plus. But the one thing that we do is that I can't credit to the spiritual is helping people to understand you have the power to change the meaning you gave to the event. When you, like this lady, I got her to say, my grandfather was empty and broken. He was taking what he didn't have. It wasn't me. What happened in her brain? Radically shifted that she was not the fault. She was not worth less than. She was complete and whole in spite of what he did. So it literally just changed the meaning and it radically set her free.
So you're in a way, you're cutting deeper, quicker, in a way that some people just, I think some therapists don't even, probably aren't connected to the deepness that quicker, that quickly. So, I mean,
unfortunately, they're not trained to do that. They're trained to say, how do you feel? And I talk to so many people, I've been through years of therapy.
Yeah.
And they just hated it with a passion because they'd sit there and get nowhere. And unfortunately, that's the training. And it's going to be honest with you guys, I've not had any formal training as a coach or a counselor or a therapist. It's all Google, YouTube, and Holy Spirit and pure desperation.
But you got results still. And that's the thing that's intriguing about this.
So it was out of pure desperation that my wife and I are married 36 years. We struggled unbelievably. We fought like cats and dogs. And I can't believe we didn't hurt each other. It was bad. I mean, we would be at each other all the time. And it just got to the point, like, you know, right after my suicidal break, that I came out of that, I got thrown out of our last counseling session. The lady got angry at me because I told her something about the Bible she didn't know was there, and she got furious and threw me out. And my wife said, "That's it. We're never going back." Because we would go to these sessions and it go nowhere. And these people were not, I mean, these are educated, trained, college degree people, and we get nowhere.
Yeah.
And I told my wife and said, "Okay, I'll agree that we'll never go back to counseling, but you and I are going to have to figure it out on our own." She goes, "Okay." And then it was just from there on, it was just pure desperation, is we had to figure it out because we weren't going back. There was no way we were going to go back. It was a waste of time. It was a waste of money. And now we are literally, if a person is open, we'll have a major life-changing breakthrough in less than an hour. If they're willing to just open their heart, open their mind, and let go. And you know, I'll give you the $1 million answer, because I can see you, that's what you're asking me.
Yeah.
It is as easy as, I need to change the meaning I gave to it, and it will radically set my brain free. Remember, my mind is doing a research of my whole life, every moment of every day, to determine what's about to happen in the next moment, 100% based on my perceptions, the meaning I gave the past. So I am living in the past, projecting it into my future. So my future will always look like my past until I change the meaning I gave to my past.
How does it stick, though? That's my question for you. Because you say this person walks away from you with these thousands and thousands, perhaps millions of memories, and they have to change the meaning and catalog it. What do you think is the difference between someone that knows they have to change the meaning versus is actually able to do it in a way that moves them forward?
Desperation. I'm so desperate to no longer live in the current lifestyle that I'm living.
That's interesting. So wait a minute, but then how do you get somebody, because I wouldn't want you to necessarily, I mean, I know you work with marriage crisis intervention and people who are really in the brink. And I've had people tell me before, look, the only way you're going to ever see somebody who's doing behavior potentially that's not helpful change is hit rock bottom. That speaks to desperation. I mean, have you... So are you, I guess I'm wondering then, even with executive coaching, are you working with people that are all at the brink of disaster? I mean, I can't believe that's true. I feel you must be called into other situations too, yeah. But
fortunately, we are now getting to people who are saying, "Hey, we're not where we want to be. We know we could be better. It's not terrible. We're not strangling each other.
Right.
We're just not where we want. We want to be more." So if you can imagine anything that you want to improve in your life, whether that be financially, nutritionally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, career, it doesn't matter. What's the number one thing you need to do? The number one root is, what are you doing that's holding you back from taking the next step? It's 100% in your perceptions. Now, don't get me wrong. There is some education that if you want to move up in your career, you need to be educated. But I had a lady that was in Market America. She's making $100,000 a year. It's not a bad gig. And she goes, "I really want to hit 200. So I'm like, okay. So we start getting into a session. And I start taking her to what it means, what is stopping her from being going to 200. So if you hit 100, I mean, you do the same thing, you just do more of it. But then we start digging deep and she goes, I'm good with 100. What happened? We start hitting some deep personal beliefs that she was not willing to expose and deal with. And I can almost guarantee you, if she didn't go there to them beliefs in her past, she's still doing 100,000. She's comfortable. She's not desperate.
That's interesting. So, now, yeah, keep going.
You don't have to be desperate. You just have to be willing. But what is desperation? Desperate, we kind of say as desperate as somebody who's desolate and, you know, almost, you know, sitting in a gutter, in rags and, you know, no food. No, you can be desperate and he's having a strong desire. So let's put it that way. If you have a very, instead of the word desperate, let's use a very, very strong desire to improve your life. It takes a very strong desire to do anything. Because let's face it, where we are, we can actually become very comfortable in our less than ideal situations. Because to get out of where we are, we got to do more than what we're doing.
Yes.
Okay. So to stay where we are, we just keep doing what we're doing at our job, how we think, where we go, what we do. But to get more, we got to change something. And it really starts with how do I think? The core of how do I think is what do I think of me? Now, if I don't think I'm worthy, what I'm going to do? My body is going to scream for attention. I want sugar. I want pleasure. So I'm going to, you give somebody $10. What do? They run down to the store, buy a candy bar and a soda. They go home, they watch a video. Instead of going on YouTube, learning, I love Lewis Howe. He has incredible top-notch people on there, brain science, you know, all these incredible learning stuff. So what happens, we sit down and watch an entertainment video instead of getting more knowledge. Or we get $10, instead of putting the $10 in the drawer and saving it, we run down to the store and spend $5 on a candy bar and a soda. We don't improve our lives because we get comfortable and our body is screaming for attention. What's pleasure? Pleasure, pleasure. Now, pleasure can be spending money, pornography, it can be drugs, it can be, you know, just sitting and watching a video. But here's the thing, is we have to say, okay, body, no, I am not going to give in to you. We have to look at what is in our brain that's screaming for this attention, like a little child throwing a temper tantrum. We have to stand up to what the body wants, what the mind wants, what the brain wants. So let me separate the two. Your brain and you are not the same thing. Your brain is simply a super powerful problem-solving machine in your head that's giving you information and telling you what the body's desiring. You have to train the brain. You have to say, no, I want to lose 20 pounds. No, I'm not going to eat that cheesecake. No, I'm sorry. My desire to lose 20 pounds is greater than my body's desire to feel pleasure. Now, why do I want to feel pleasure so much that I will eat the cheesecake when I know it's going to not let me lose the weight? Because I don't feel good about me. Why don't I feel good about me? Because the belief systems that I ingrained into my brain. Where did they come from? Typically from your core. Your core's conception at 10 years old. This is why meditation, sound bath, yoga, all these stuff are really, really good things to bring you into a state of calmness, but they don't maintain it. You have to do the work. It's called transformation work. You have to go back to the original event. Change the meaning you gave to that event. And sometimes you got to keep going back because it'll come up in a different angle. Remember, your brain is a super powerful problem-solving machine that's always throwing up questions and answers to try to get you to the next level. What is your brain feeding you? Only what you programmed into it. It is simply a super powerful problem-solving machine in your head that's feeding back to you what you programmed into it. Guess what? You alone can change the programming. It's really that simple. Again, I am not minimizing depression. I am not minimizing trauma. I've been there. I know what it's like when you're in the middle of it. It is devastating. It is real. Depression is a killer. Depression kills a lot of people. And it almost got me. So I'm not minimizing it. But I am saying there is hope. You literally have the ability. And a lot of times people need help. It is extremely hard to do this on your own. Very, very difficult. So finding somebody, a friend, a coach, a therapist, a counselor, the key is you got to give it a new meaning. Because let me say, you are worthy no matter what you've been through. You are worthy to be more.
Ray, do you think that a lot of people, if you were to strip away a lot of people's basic wants, a partner, and they're struggling to find it, weight loss, and they can't overcome their habits, do you feel that under that base level desire, there is this desperation if you dig deep enough?
Sure. Because why are people doing bad things that they know they shouldn't be doing? People don't want to just be bad. I mean, for the most part, the majority of the people don't want to just be bad people. What is the underlying, I call it the driver. What's the driving force that is, why do the people go do the drugs? Why do they gamble? Why do sex, pornography? What's driving all that? Is there is an emptiness, there's a void that they're looking, people that are overweight don't want to be overweight. They don't have no pleasure in that. It is, unfortunately, the driving force behind taking that next bite. The alcoholic, he doesn't really want to be drunk all the time, but he's taking that drink. What's the driving force? The drug addict, he's looking for that high. And all of a sudden that, not all of a sudden, but gradually need more and more and more to get the same rush. So gambling, it's a rush. It's an adrenaline rush. So our body becomes so addicted to this pleasure because we're in so much pain. Where does the pain come from? The pain is emotional. We're dealing with these emotional disconnects. The emotional disconnect comes from where? Our beliefs. Our beliefs are what drives our emotions. So here comes an event. We look at the event. We research our brain. What does this event mean to me? Whether if it has pain attached to it, we're looking to get safe, to get somewhere to be safe. And then once we feel the threat is gone, we want to get back to a place of pleasure. Now, this can all happen by thought alone. We're just sitting here on my couch and I'm watching the TV and something happens. Oh, my daughter loves to, whenever there's a movie playing about a child missing their father, my daughter does like this to me and starts looking at me because she knows I'm going to cry. Whenever there's a scene of a child, the father's walking away or hurting the child or something, my daughter knows that I'm going to get all teary-eyed. So she always goes in front of me and tries to make fun of him. But
yeah.
So what happens is we're there and by thought alone, we start going into rehearsing the beliefs about who we are and what is happening. Now, when we're safe, we want to come back to a place of pleasure and feeling good. So what is our go-to for pleasure? Is it food? Is it alcohol? Is it drugs? Is it sex? Is it gambling? Is it spending money, buying things, hoarding things? So it's all driven by the desire for pleasure that we do not perceive that we have. If we do not dig into the core, where did that come from? We weren't born with it. It's a learned behavior. So guess what? How we act and react is a learned behavior. We're not born angry. We learn to be angry. We're not born depressed. We learn to be depressed. It's learned behavior. So we can go and unlearn it. It takes time. It is not an overnight. Now, I did say we have major life-changing breakthroughs in less than an hour. That's in one area. But there's many, many areas of your life that you need to keep applying that same principle to over and over and over. So it's a matter, I call it one thing, one step. It's everything is take one thing. And so many times in life, let's face it, life is happening at the speed of life. And we try to do all these things. And I like to say is I can do everything, I just can't do it all. But when we slow it down, take one thing, take it one step. Okay, now I can take one thing, take it one step. Now I can do 10 of them in a minute, but I'm still getting my brain to come down to, I'm going to take this one thing, I'm going to take it this one step. So it gives my brain the release, the relief that I don't have to juggle all this. I'm just going to take this one thing. I'm going to focus on that one thing. I'm going to take it that one step. Now you can speed that process up or slow it down to adjust to where are you in your state of mind. If you're not in a good, you're not a good state of mind, you're not a good place. And I love this about Simone Biles stepping away from the Olympics. I love this. She put her needs above everybody else's wants. And I'm like, yes, I am so proud of her for saying my needs are more important than your wants. And she said, I'm not doing it. I was so proud of her. And that's what we need to do is we need to say, I'm not emotionally in a good place. I need to step aside right now. You need to respect my emotional needs. Now, as a parent, as a spouse, I can't tell my family every day, oh, my emotional needs are so important, you just need to leave me alone. But I am getting to the place where when I have an emotional need, I'm like, hey guys, I'm checking out. I need 10 minutes. I need an hour. I need a couple hours. I'm going to be unavailable. And there is nothing wrong with telling your significant other, your children, your boss, whatever, hey, I need a moment. I need 10 minutes. I need an hour. I need a day.
Yeah.
What do you need to now? Here's the key. If I take that moment, is I got to say, Ray, stop. What are you thinking? Why are you thinking that? Is it true? What is the truth? I need to take that time to put into perspective, is what I believe really, really true? Or is it just how I see it? Now, what do I want out of life? Do I desire to have a greater life? Do I desire for you to have a greater life because we're now connected and I want to help you? The only way I can help you is I got to become better myself. Because if I help you to my level and then I don't better myself, how can I lift you up?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How you were talking about bringing the Father's blessing to so many other people, but Did someone bless you as the father? Did you do it to yourself? I mean, what was the moment where you really dropped out of your depression and realized, okay, I'm thinking about this differently now?
So the night of my, the night I was going to end it all, as I was walking toward my shop, a righteous anger rose up, an anger rose up inside of me about this depression. I'm like, no, this can't be happening again. And I do believe in demonic influence and demonic oppression. There was this anger rose up in me, and all of a sudden there was this severe, severe pain in my head. And it literally felt like my head was going to explode. And all of a sudden, bam, the pain was gone and my mind was clear. I no longer wanted to die. I knew I did not want to die. Now, I believe because I lived my life in anger, in bitterness, and in strife, I built a platform for the enemy, the demonic spirits, to have a, to build, to stand on. I built a platform of lies, and they were allowed to be there. When I got angry, they had to leave. And when my mind, now, I had a choice. I can continue on the path of anger, bitterness, and strife, or I can desperately search for truth to not continue to think how I was thinking. And the Holy Spirit did speak to me very clearly and said, Ray, nobody's coming to fix it. At that moment, I had a choice to accept it or reject that. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, wow, I kind of like the idea that I don't need somebody to come and fix it. But at the same time, doggone it, I want them to come back and fix it.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
I'm just being real.
Of course.
I mean, do I like this or don't I like this? Do I want them to come and fix it or do I just want to plow ahead myself? Well, I made the choice. Wow, I accept that. I am going to take the path that nobody is coming to help me. It is me. I have to make the right choices. 3 days later, the Holy Spirit spoke again, very, very clearly. He said, Ray, they were broken and empty. They could not give you what they did not have. That in itself is where I started going back in my life, systematically looking at the things that went wrong and changing the value, changing the meanings that I gave to it. When I start changing the meaning, I start changing how I think. How I think, I change how I acted. Because here's what happens. You have a thought. And if you don't take that thought and say, no, you can't be here, it becomes an idea. So the thought bounces around in your head for a while. And all of a sudden, you start stringing this together and you come up with an idea. Well, that idea becomes a belief, and that belief will become a lifestyle, will become an action, and that action will become a lifestyle. That lifestyle will create new thoughts. That new thoughts are just continues in this cycle. That goes either in a bad way, it goes, it takes you sideways in a bad way, or yeah, it helps you to grow in a good way. So I'm in, can I say, 7 years into my recovery as a survivor of depression. And it's a continually growing process. I'm not where I want to be. I am continually pressing in, striving. And part of that is, that's helping me is I'm teaching other people what I already know, which drives me to want more. And I will sit down with a total stranger in a restaurant and I will pour out my best information and never see him again. But I know in my heart that I just changed the world, because that person's life will never be the same because they met me.
That is incredibly generous. And also, I feel very, very honest. I think there are some people in, certainly in the spiritual community, but also in the religious community, that start preaching like they figured out something and then they know all the answers and, you know, they're going to bless you and heal you. And the fact that you're coming and saying, look, I have worked with people, I have, in a sense, helped people with their healing, but I know I'm still working on it too.
Oh.
That's not something you hear a lot.
I hope I never stop growing, because my new quest, and I don't understand it, so I can't elaborate real well, is quantum spiritual.
Oh.
I believe there is a quantum physics that's been explored, but in my mind, I give it the name quantum spiritual, that we are so connected in our spirits that is beyond what we have the ability to understand yet. Now, maybe some people do understand this. I'm exploring it. I am very convinced that we as spirit beings can go into the spirit realm and we can communicate with other people in the spirit realm, but we also have an effect on other people by our spirits as well. Now, that's common knowledge. But what is quantum spiritual is still developing in my mind. I'm not exactly sure how to unpack that.
Yeah.
So when I catch up, I'm doing a lot of writing. I just finished a manual that I want to teach, an 8-hour seminar called Understanding Your Owner's Manual. And it's very intense. So everybody that I talk to about all this, they're like, wow, my brain is full.
But with good stuff, with love and light and spirit. I was going to ask you about this too. You were talking about cortisol and different serotonin, all these these different scientific terms before. How important is it? It seems very important to you, I guess, to bring in science to meet spirituality. It's been very important this entire conversation. Some people completely discard it. They go spiritual. They go, you know what, those chemicals, it doesn't even matter. It's just spirit. It's just light and love coursing through you. It doesn't matter. Why is that so important to you to have that breakdown scientifically?
Sure, because if I think you're referring to people in the church that only want to be spiritual.
Yeah, but also, and I'll say the New Age community. I mean, I talk to people that are psychics and people like this. I think some people would dismiss some of this stuff too.
So the only perspective I can come from is my Judeo-Christian perspective.
Yeah.
So in the garden, Adam and Eve were human beings with a spiritual connection. Because of the fall, they lost that spiritual connection. Now, the dilemma that we have, in my understanding, is what I call the junk in the middle, is our emotions. Adam and Eve were not emotionally driven people. They were spiritually driven people because they didn't even know they were naked. So that's how spiritual they were. Unfortunately, now we are emotionally driven people trying to get back to a spiritual connection. Because that's what Adam and Eve were created with. Now, we still have, but we have a dilemma. Most people say my biggest problem is the devil. I say, no, it's my emotions. My emotions are a bigger problem than the devil ever could be. Because I choose because I want. Why do I want? Because I don't have. Why don't I have is because of what I believe. So that is why we have to understand what I call your owner's manual. Because when you have fear, doubt, worry, or anxiety, if you don't understand that in the nanosecond of you perceiving a fear, cortisol and adrenaline go racing through your body, taking away your cognitive thinking, processing ability, greatly diminishing your ability to think clearly and with common sense. You ever see some really intelligent person do something really, really stupid?
Yes. Yeah.
Right? So there's a reason for that. Their IQ, their intellectual intelligence did not drop at all. Their EQ, their emotional awareness dropped from 720 bits of data to as low as 20 in a nanosecond. That's the speed of light. their processing ability drop to, I'm going to fight or flight, called the stress response. I'm going to run or I'm going to fight. That's all they can think. That's why somebody who is super intelligent can do some things that make you scratch your head and wonder, hope I don't want to go to that school he went to. So if we don't tie in the physical, neurological, because that's what we are a body, and that's the part what's happening chemically and neurologically and electrically in my body, because my body is a very intricate part and you can't separate the spirit and the body. So you have to understand what the body's doing. What's the brain doing? What's my spirit doing? So I don't believe that at any point we can separate any of the three as long as we're here on this earth. So we need to understand how they're so integrated, you can't pull them apart. Now, you can go into the spirit realm without your body, but you can't you can't shut your body down completely or you die.
Yeah.
So, and your body and your mind will pull you out of the spirit realm in a heartbeat. Because if you're into the spiritual high and things are going well, and all of a sudden a fear is what? Is a fear is a belief. Only you have that belief. Nobody else has that belief, only you. So the fear is only real in your own mind. So here you are in a spiritual high. And all of a sudden a perception or a fear comes to your mind. Your body releases neurochemicals that affect your body. The adrenaline shuts down your organs and dries up your saliva, dilates your pupils, races your heart, shallows your breathing. So it will yank you out of that spiritual high into an emotional, physical state of being so that your body can go and be safe.
Wow. this is all great. I am so fascinated by this idea that, well, look, if you are listening right now and this is resonating with you, even if it's not resonating with you, you should check it out. Everybody needs to check out fathersblessing.info, healing hearts, transforming lives. But then the other thing here that intrigues me is ilapnow.com, which is really your coaching and your training, and you do a lot of this corporate work. In terms of the corporate work, obviously you work personally too, but do people know that you come from such a spiritual perspective when they bring you into an office?
No, we come in straight secular, because let's be honest, the first thing you have to work with, the person's beliefs. And their beliefs drive their emotions. So everything you do in life is an emotional decision. Every decision you make, whether it's corporately or whether it's in your own personal life or whether it's spiritually, runs through your emotional calculator. And it all happens at the speed of light. So even when we work with people on a spiritual level, we really got to get down to your beliefs is the key. So we call it the level one. Is we want to get into your beliefs. How do you see you? What do you think about you? That is the number one. I don't care if you're an executive of a Fortune 500 company and you want to make a move. You're going to calculate it through your emotions, through your personal beliefs. And yeah, you went to school, you have the master's degree, the doctor's degrees, you're still going to make an emotional decision. So the number one key, and I just recognized this the other day, emotional awareness trainings that we do in the corporate world are also sensitivity training. It's also racial reconciliation. It's inclusion. Because really, what is racial diversity? Racial diversity is simply a belief run by your emotions about a person of another gender or a race. And gender inclusion. Why is gender inclusion? Again, it is my beliefs based on an emotional decision that I am not going to accept somebody for their sexual orientation, for their race, for their culture. When you break it all down, workplace conflicts, whether mistakes, accidents in the workplace, all come down to emotionally driven beliefs and ideals that are deeply ingrained. And what happens, they become an auto response. You react automatically without even thinking because it's so ingrained in the depth of who you are. How do you change that? You can't just say, write it on the chalkboard 100 times, I won't talk in class.
Right.
You have to go back to the root. Why am I talking in class? Why don't I like this person of that gender or race? Why don't I like that person for their orientation? Why? What is deep inside of me that makes me go sideways when I see or interact with this? There's a deep underlying, again, the driver. And what we do corporately, individually, maritally, it's the same thing. We got to get back to that deep underlying beliefs. We've got to get down to that driver. We got to help you recognize what is that driving force. Because if we don't, you're going to run a maintenance program. You're going to try to be nice and you're going to put on your happy face when you're in this situation. But what happens when you keep putting on the smiley face? It's not you. It didn't do a deep transformational change in your life. It just made you behave, it's external behavior that I'm just going to behave differently when I'm around you. But then when I get away from you, I'm going to be angry and frustrated because I had to be nice to you. But what happens if we can get down to the core driving force and help you change it there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now it's no longer a maintenance program. It is a, this is how I flow.
Do people, I mean, they must see your Papa Ray. I mean, I wonder if you've ever gone in a corporate group and by the end they go, wait a minute, you're a pastor? We had no idea. Have you ever fooled anyone all the way, Ray? I mean,
we're very upfront. I mean, I tell them I'm a devout Christian, but I can come in and teach purely secular.
Yeah.
We don't. And again, in the beginning, no matter who I'm working with, I say, you know, I know you're a devout Christian, but that's not your problem. I don't need to tell you what the Bible says because you already know that. That's not your
right.
problem. We need to get down to the core. What is your emotional driving force? So no matter who I'm working with, 90% of my focus is on helping you understand you. Because if you don't change how you see you, like the lady that wanted to make $200,000 a year in Market America, she wasn't willing to go back and change the perception she was given herself. Because we got to a certain point and she shut down. She goes, I'm done.
Yeah.
We got to an uncomfortable place and she didn't want to go there. So you could say she was quite happy with the $100,000 a year. So anybody in corporate America, whether you're the business owner, whether you're the manager, whether you're the CEO or the CFO, it doesn't matter. Whatever you're stuck at or whatever you want to increase at, there's more likely than not, there is a deep-rooted belief about yourself that is not true. That wrong belief, if you're not willing to go back and correct it, will be your Achilles heel the rest of your life.
Oh, whoa. We need to end the message of hope right now. I mean, well, look, tell you what, what would happen if we brought you to Wall Street? How many of those Wall Street people need the Father's blessing, do you think?
Most of them. So a lot of people's anger helps them to become successful because they don't let they push hard. And that does, pushing hard drives success, but it doesn't create relationships. So unfortunately, you see so many people at a high level of success from very broken homes, broken families. They have the money, they have the car, but they cry themselves to sleep at night. Let's just be real. They're not happy. And how many of them people would give all that money to have peace, love, and joy in their life? So the father's blessing in Wall Street, wow, that would be amazing. Because, you know, I think everybody should have tons of money. I think everybody should have lots of money. I think everybody should have more money than they need. Okay. So I have no hangout with money. Not at all.
Yeah.
Where I would love to help people is feeling at peace with themselves. I want to help people to feel at peace when they're naked and alone. Because who you are when you are naked and alone is who you are at your core. Everything you add to that is not you, it's just what you added to feel good. That's deep.
Yeah.
Who you are naked and alone is who you are at the core. Every car, every house, every piece of clothing, every accessory you attach to that is to give you pleasure. Now, if we can strip away all the things that give you pleasure, we're down to the core of who you are. And again, I believe everybody should have more money than they need. No hangups of money. My goal in life is to help you be at peace no matter where you are. And I don't care your religious beliefs. I don't care your sexual orientations. I don't care what your doctrines are. I want to help people be at peace when they have nothing. Because that is everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I also really do not want to walk into a ticker room in Wall Street and see a bunch of these people completely naked. But
no.
I know that's But if they are comfortable doing that, maybe they've progressed somehow. Maybe they've ascended.
We do not do naked sessions. No, I'm sorry. No,
For all of you listening out there that got excited, that is not what Pop Ray does, okay, people?
No, this is a classy affair.
No, I totally get what you're saying. It's this idea of, I mean, that is the absolute level of contentment. And, you know, it's echoed throughout all, it doesn't even matter, Judeo-Christian, Hindu, you know, so many people are chasing happiness. And I think it was Eckhart Tolle that I was reading in The Power of Now that said, oh, it's not happiness, it's peace.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Yes. Peace is I can be at peace with who I am with nothing. If I don't need anything to be at peace, that is the ultimate. But if I need a car, a watch, or an Armani suit, which I'm hoping to get one in a couple of years, I would love to have 10 Armanis and my, you know, a Submariner, Rolex. I'm all about that. Would love that. But I'm at peace. I don't have that.
Right.
I live in a very humble home, but I'm at peace. I don't need that. I would love, but I don't need. And I would be okay if I never had. But if I have the opportunity. And so my thing is, if I do go and spend $5,000 on an Armani suit, I want to give $5,000 away. So I'm going to need $10,000 before I buy the suit. Because if I'm going to buy something for me personally, I'm not saying that this is for anybody else, but if I'm going to buy something that is way above and beyond my needs, I want to be able to give that much away to somebody else first. That's just personal. But so what we do is we love to, as a matter of fact, we won't meet anybody for less than 4 hours in our initial coaching session. Because I say is, if you have a splinter in your arm, do you want me to tug on that once a week? And then you come back next week, we'll tug on it again until we get it pulled out.
Right.
Or you want me to grab a hold of that splinter and yank it out, and then we can bandage it up and it can get healed. The next best level is we like to sit down with people for 8 hours. So we do an 8 hour at one shot session.
Wow.
Now here's the ultimate, and we only do this with couples, is I will go anywhere in the world and I will stay in your home for 3 to 5 days. I sleep there. I eat meals with you. We start our session at 8 o'clock in the morning at your kitchen table. We're in session till 6 o'clock that night. No interruptions, no phone calls, no visitors between 8 and 6. I've done probably 20 of those by now in the last 3 years, where I will fly out and stay in somebody's home. We have intense personal, that's why we call it intense personal transformation. We have been extremely successful with that. Now, we had some couples that obviously didn't follow through, but we had the majority of them followed through with what they were learning and had major, major life changes. As a matter of fact, I will fly anywhere in the world and stay in somebody's home for 3 to 5 days. And in that amount of time, before I leave, if I did not change their life, I will give their money back, including all travel costs.
Wow.
There's only one condition. I will ask them, and it's only getting them to talk about something. And if they refuse to talk about or go to that place, I'll walk out. That's the only condition I have. Because if I can get them to open up and talk about it, they can be healed.
Oh, whoa. we're saying therapist. We're taking down therapists. We're taking down counselors here. I mean, Papa Ray's got, you've got something. You've got, there's some special recipe here. I don't know what it is. This is very interesting. Okay. Then look, let me ask you this. When it comes to, I don't know, maybe it is the same thing. But when it comes to people out there who might be listening that might have a strained relationship with a parent, when it comes to people out there that might be having a strained relationship with a spouse, anyone out there listening that might be having a difficult time with a family member right now, I mean, obviously, yes, you can't give a full blessing on the masses right now, but if there is one thing you could say to them to make them start to heal that relationship, what would you tell them?
Change the meaning you give to it. It will radically change your life.
It's
change the meaning you give to it.
A consistent message through and through.
It's 100%. So I'm trying to think of a scenario. Let's just say you come home as a teenager, your father's always angry. Change the meaning. So you feel, oh, my father doesn't like me. That's why he's angry. Change the meaning. My father is empty and he is broken. He cannot give me what he does not have. It's not my fault. That will radically change how you perceive you, number one. It will change how you see them. It'll change how you treat them, how you think about them, how your spirit projects to them. And it'll also change how you see you, and it'll change how you project to the world, because you cannot go through a traumatic event and not project that trauma out from you when you're other places. Because there are people that are spiritually sensitive will pick up on that on a heartbeat. You can paint your smile, but they can see behind the paint, because it's not possible to be hurting and go out and try to project happiness. because you are you wherever you go, there you are. You can't separate you because that's who you are in your being. Just because you have that smile on doesn't mean you're not projecting pain. And for me, because I'm very sensitive spiritually and I watch for these things, it's very easy for me to pick that stuff up. And so there's other people out there like myself that can see that. But here's the thing, guys. For your own blessing, for your own healing, for your own peace of mind, change the meaning of what that person's doing. Because when you take it away that it's your fault, that you are somehow deserving it, because you're not. And let me just say this. Can I just share a blessing?
Yeah.
How much time we have? Okay.
Yeah, so, please.
All right. So let me, I'm going to say, guys, can I stand in the place of your father and bless you? I just want to say that I'm sorry for not being there when you were a child. I'm sorry for not loving you. I'm sorry for not hearing you. And I'm very sorry for the harsh words that I spoke towards you. I'm sorry for rejecting you or abandoning you. I want you to know it was never your fault. It was me. I was wrong. And I take the blame and I take the responsibility. I want to say, I want to bless you at your conception. You're not a mistake. You're not an accident. I declare you are loved and wanted as a son or a daughter. I bless you in that first trimester in your mother's womb. You're not rejected. You're not abandoned. You are loved. You are wanted. And I bless you. I bless you in the second trimester in your mother's womb. You're not a mistake. You're not an accident. I declare you are loved. You are wanted. You are accepted. And you are expected as a son or a daughter. I bless you in the third trimester. You're not rejected. You're not a burden. You're not a financial difficulty. You're not causing problems or burdens to us. You are not abandoned. You are not rejected. You are loved and you are wanted. I bless the time of your birth. You're not born in the wrong time. You are loved. You are wanted. You are accepted. Now I just want you to imagine that Jesus was the first one to hold you. I want you to imagine you're looking into his eyes and seeing how much he loves you. Just feel the compassion, feel the love, feel the acceptance. Because you are loved, you are wanted, and you are accepted. I bless you as an infant. You're not a problem. You're not in the way. You're not too much. You are loved. You are accepted. You are wanted. I bless you as a toddler. You're not underfoot. You're not a problem. You are loved and accepted. I bless you as a youth. You're not a rebellious kid. You're not a problem. You're not in the way. I accept you and I love you as my son or my daughter. I bless you as a teen. You're not a rebellious or stupid teenager. You do not make bad decisions. I understand you're curious, and I understand you're learning, and I accept you. You are not rejected. You are not abandoned. You are loved. You are wanted, and I bless you. I bless you as an adult. You're not reckless. You're not stupid. You are not abandoned, and you're definitely not rejected, because I accept you as your father. I accept you as my son. I accept you as my daughter. You are loved. You are wanted, and you are accepted. And I love you. I bless you. Amen.
Amen. Ray Hurst, everybody check him out. Fathersblessing.info, ilapnow.com. Your book coming out soon, I imagine that will be available on your websites. So yes, everybody check that out. I appreciate the blessing. It definitely felt, even if it wasn't for anything specific, you know, even if it wasn't, it's always good to hear a fatherly voice of acceptance wherever it's coming from.
Huge.
So
that goes across all cultures, all religions, all backgrounds. I mean, it's like, that's the most common language, is a father's love. It knows no bounds.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you doing that, and I hope that the hedge fund owners listening to this show that just heard that, get your life together. Ray accepts you now, all right?
Yeah.
Give back to humanity, please. You know what? That was for Jeff Bezos, that one. Oh, my gosh. No, look, I appreciate, I really do appreciate you coming on the show. This has been a very informative discussion. And I love how much love you have. So keep spreading it, Papa Ray. It's been such a pleasure.
I want to be for the world what the world was not for me when I needed them the most.
You're doing a great job. You really are.
That's my passion. That's absolutely, if I meet somebody, I will pour out my best information, and I know I'll never see them again, but I'm very, very confident they will never be the same because they met me. And that means I changed the world.
That's a beautiful conviction. I love that. I love that. Awesome. Ray, hey, such a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you.
Ray Hurst. So good. So, so good. In some ways, I almost wish I didn't know the service was out there, because if I have kids one day and I mess up, I could just be like, hey, Ray, can you give him the blessing? I'm messing. Really do love Papa Ray, though. And I love all of you for listening to the show. Thank you so much, Rodney McGilvery, for theme music. Thank you, Papa Ray Hurst. We have some more exciting stuff coming up this week. Talk soon.